This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
New videos about abortion clinics comes out. We have the details on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Welcome to the program. I'm Caleb Cockwit. Good to be with you on a Friday. The weekend is nearly upon us. I do have, unfortunately, I hate to bring this to you, honestly, and usually I'm glad to bring you the news, but this one really does weigh heavy on me. It seems like every few months we get another video surfacing about the abortion industry, usually done undercover in some kind of sting operation, which this one was. There's a video, and I wish I could bring you the audio, but there's a catacade of technical issues plaguing the station right now, including the fact that I'm actually in the studio by myself, so I'm both your producer and your host for this morning. But this particular video, I tried to get the video downloaded and to where I could share it with you, but interestingly enough, the video has been removed from YouTube. Now, the stated reason is that the video does not comply with YouTube's standards. I watched the video in its entirety. There are definitely disturbing things in it, but no disturbing graphics. It's just people standing around in what appears to be the conference room of some hotel somewhere talking to each other. And yes, the things that they are saying are very disturbing, but there's no foul language. They're, so far as I can tell, using correct medical terminology. What they're doing is horrific, but that's because the practice of abortion itself is horrific. And so YouTube being uber liberal, we've talked about YouTube censoring conservative videos, even though they don't break any of the standards that they set for their videos. YouTube's a private company. They can do that if they want to. They're allowed to censor. But when it comes to this one, it seems like the only possible explanation for removing it is that they didn't like what was being said. Maybe there's a different reason. Not really sure, but the point is this video is actually fairly difficult to find. I have posted a link that has the same video posted by the Center for Medical Progress, which are the people who did the sting operation. That is on the Patriot Preacher's Facebook page. It's about 3.5 minutes, I believe. So if you can, and I can't, because of technical issues, pull the audio from that, but if you want to listen to it yourself and watch it, you can do that at the Patriot Preacher's Facebook page, so be sure to check that out today. Anytime that I'm unable to bring you something or we have something that has a visual aspect to it, because, of course, that doesn't work with radio, you can usually find anything associated with the show that has some kind of visual aspect to it on the Facebook page and the Twitter page. But getting into some of the technical aspects of this, most of the people that are being interviewed have some association with Planned Parenthood. Now, this is not a Planned Parenthood event per se. It's the National Abortion Federation. And this conference that they have, where it's different professionals, and using that term fairly loosely here, medical professionals gather together, talk about abortion procedure, that kind of thing. So that's typically what you're looking at when you're watching this video. It's usually Planned Parenthood people. I didn't see anyone that wasn't associated with Planned Parenthood specifically, but the vast majority of the people that you're going to be hearing from at this conference are Planned Parenthood officials, sometimes pretty high up. So it's interesting to me that not a single mainstream news source picked up the story. Now, granted, the story's only about a day old. I think it broke yesterday morning. I typically do my prep the night before, so on Wednesday night I wouldn't have known about it. but this story's about a day old and not a single mainstream news source has picked up on it, not even Fox. And so the reason I bring this to your attention is because it is up to us to spread this around. You can, like I said, find the video on the Facebook page, share it. Just to give you an idea of some of the content, there is a... The whole thing opens up with the lady talking about how there's really nobody telling the story and talking about the, I guess, challenges that comes with being an abortion practitioner and how no one is telling their story. For example, when the child's head gets stuck and they have to essentially break the head open to forcibly remove it, which was even more bone-chilling when you consider the audience kind of chuckles when she says that. We go on to another lady who was talking about how, and she's a medical practitioner, I suppose, of some kind, she was talking about how sometimes the labor is too far along, and to avoid having to say that she performed a partial birth abortion, probably has some kind of partial birth abortion restriction in her state, she asked for a second set of forceps so she can essentially forcibly hold the child in the womb, which I imagine, not that I'm a doctor, but I believe that that couldn't be good for the woman's system, for her health. And she essentially uses the forceps to hold the baby in the womb a little longer and then grab the limbs one by one and tear them off so that the baby's already dead when the breach happens and the baby is quote-unquote born, which obviously it wouldn't... leaving the birth canal is the more accurate term because it's the baby's unfortunately no longer alive when she does this. There's a woman talking about how one time she's performing an abortion, she's pulling out the body parts of the baby, and an eyeball lands in her lap. I mean, just really grotesque stuff that it's hard to imagine any human being talking about so casually and flippantly. And I remember she referred to it as gross, which, if this is nothing but a mass of tissue, if this is just a tumor essentially growing in the body, I don't know why it would be disturbing to this person, since that's obviously what she believes. Probably the most telling part of the video, and like I said, this is only about 3 minutes and all this content is stacked into it. It's a preview. It's a shortened version of a longer video, obviously. One of the most chilling things is the chief speaker there in the room that's giving the speech was talking about anti-abortion activists and said, well, they will often say that it's killing, that it's murder, that it's violent. Let's just go ahead and give them that. Admit that it's killing. Admit that it's violent. Apparently, she's just not real concerned with that. If she's committing the killing, the murder of another human being, she's perfectly all right with admitting to that and shoving it in other people's faces. This is up to us. We've got to do something about it because, and I'm going to mention this later on in the Star Spangled Sermon, kind of bookend with this theme. I've studied the scripture my entire life. God never holds the people who stand idle guiltless. The people who stand by and do nothing, the people who may be sympathetic to the cause of victims but don't really lift a finger to help them. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here because I know, especially in my audience, there's lots of people that I know for a fact have been fighting against abortion. But we can always do more. This is the greatest challenge of our generation, and I hope to be a member of the generation that sees abortion ended in America. I don't know if that'll be the case. I hope it is. With some of the public opinion polls, it looks like we're moving more in that direction. But I genuinely believe that abortion will end. that legal abortion will no longer be something that you can do in the United States of America. And I believe maybe 50, 100 years from now, that the generations after us will look back on our practice of abortion in the same way that we now look back on the practice of slavery. Just a general wondering of how could they have let that go on? What kind of monsters, barbarians, allowed this to take place? If we stand by idle, history will not be on our side. It will not remember us favorably. And what I believe is far more important is that when we're called into account on Judgment Day, if we stood by idle, that will not look favorably upon us either. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Declaration of Independence laid the cornerstone of human government upon the first precepts of Christianity. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in, talk about what we've been talking about. I am going to move on from the abortion undercover video just because I had planned to do analysis of the video as it came up, but unfortunately, like I said, technical issues are preventing me from doing that, and apparently YouTube accomplished their purpose, because by taking it down, even though so far as I could tell there was nothing in violation of their terms of agreement, and I'm not saying I'm an expert on that, but I know it pretty well because I'm a YouTuber myself, but even though I couldn't really find anything that would be a violation of that, they took it down and they've prevented y'all from hearing it over the airwaves this morning. So congratulations, YouTube. I guess you accomplished your goal. But you can check that out at the Patriot Preacher's Facebook page, and I encourage you to do so. It's the top story for right now, so be sure to check that out whenever you get a chance. All right. So I wanted to move on just for a second because it's been a few days since I talked about it because we had other things to mention, but I wanted to bring up the Trump-Russia investigation, which has been quite a soap opera over the past few days. And I was watching an interview yesterday with Jake Tapper. It was with Democrat Chris Coons, who was talking about how the investigation is unfolding, what all is going on there. One thing that kind of stuck out to me is he talked about how the GOP platform has changed on recognizing Crimea as a part of the Ukraine. And this is significant because, of course, the GOP, generally all the Republicans, have been the enemies of Russia for a long time now. They've not necessarily been enemies, that's too strong a language, but even when we were allies with Russia, there was always a very healthy dose of skepticism with the Republicans and Russia, which is accurate. He's not wrong there. I mean, we can look at President Ronald Reagan, really not so much George W. Bush at times, certainly more skeptical of him than I would say President Obama or Bill Clinton, but not to the degree that a lot of Republicans would have been. But my point in all of that is, now all of a sudden there's a lot of people in the Republican Party that are more favorable for Russia, which actually is 100% true. We can see that with Republican voters, with public opinion polls. I think it was Pew that actually polled that about people's general feelings about Russia and how in a very short amount of time in this previous election, it completely flipped, that Republicans who were about 70% unfavorable to Russia were now about 60-65% favorable to Russia, so and vice versa with the Democrats. And so there was this massive reversal when it came to how people felt about the Russians, which is not healthy, it's not good. I am tired of people just wearing the jerseys and their opinion is whatever the party's opinion of them is at the time. But nonetheless, he did bring that up, and that's a real concern considering that Paul Manafort, former Trump campaign manager, was actually paid money to run campaigns in the Ukraine that were favorable to Russia. And that's one of the things that, now granted, he was fired before the campaign wound down and they replaced him. So they did at least get Manafort out of there. But the point is, there is some suspicion there that I think is legitimate. He mentioned that people in the Trump administration might have played a part in that. Manafort wasn't really there long enough for me to believe that that took place, but there are certainly others that could have had that influence. Maybe Manafort did, I don't know. So all this concerns me too. And it concerns me that Trump kind of looked the other way when it came to Crimea. So I'm upset by that, just like he is, especially considering that we're the ones that got the Ukraine to ditch their nuclear missiles. And we said, don't worry about getting rid of your nukes. We'll protect you. It'll be all right. We have your back. If anybody tries to invade you, or, you know, then the United States will be protecting you. And then, of course, they got rid of their nuclear warheads under that agreement. And then Russia invades, takes part of their land, and the U.S. is like, yeah, sorry about that. So that's a failing of the Obama administration. But either way, I think it's going to be hard for countries to trust Americans after that when we don't follow up on what we said we were going to do. But what was telling to me is that Trump asked him if, or sorry, Jake Tapper asked him if Donald Trump himself had actually done anything suspicious, or that he's changed any policy opinions that might have shown that Trump has a tie to Russia himself, not just his campaign. Now, the most recent leaks to Russia in this meeting were what he cited. So you remember a few days ago we covered this here on the program, that Trump accidentally let it slide that in this meeting the name of a city and some intel that he was not supposed to divulge. Legally, he's within his right to do so, but it was a bad idea, especially in front of the Russians, who were our rivals. What's interesting to me is that the Democrats are pushing this as evidence, but here's the question that I would ask. If Trump were a traitor, because, you know, I don't like Trump, but I don't think he's a traitor. If Trump were a traitor, why would he let this intel slip where there's all these witnesses around? If Trump were really trying to undermine the United States of America and pass off some big secret intel that he wanted them to have, why wouldn't he do it in a private room or through somebody else or through a surrogate? Why would he break it there where there are other witnesses that would see it? I think that if anything, that's evidence that he's not in bed with the Russians. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free."
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440, as always, are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, let me know what you're thinking, what's on your mind. You can always call in, and we'll try to get to you as soon as possible. Did want to sort of shed a little light on the Trump story. Now, I'm not picking on Chris Coons specifically. He's not the only Democrat that has said this, but he is, in part because he's acting as a representative for the Democrat side on Jake Tapper's program on CNN, but also because of what he's saying, and other Democrats are sort of echoing this, they're using the slip-up with intelligence with Russia, which, by the way, is very serious. I'm not trying to say that it isn't. I'm not trying to say that we should not be looking into this. I was one of the ones supporting a special prosecutor for long before it was the common, what's the word I'm looking for? It was the most popular opinion to have amongst conservatives. And furthermore, when it comes to this slip-up with Russia, I made the case that the president needs to be someone that can be trusted to use intelligence wisely and not just let it all hang out when it comes to our geopolitical enemies, like Russia. So I'm sympathetic to his concerns. But this idea that somehow Trump slipping up and giving information to the Russians is proof that he's in bed with them. If that's the case, then when a few years ago Barack Obama had his slip up with the chief of staff over in Afghanistan, the CIA chief that was operating over there, then that proves that Obama's in bed with the media, which of course he was, but that doesn't prove that. Now, in Trump's case, it doesn't seem feasible at all for him to have, if he were really this secret double agent that's really working for Russia and colluding with them, it makes absolutely no sense for him to have done this in a room with all these witnesses, and not only witnesses, but witnesses that know this intelligence and know what's appropriate to be shared and what isn't. If Trump were this evil criminal mastermind, which they've always tried to make out that Trump is, then he would have given that information through a different channel. He would have either sent a surrogate or had somebody relay it to the Russians in a secret way where they couldn't find it. This is incompetence. That makes Trump a moron. It doesn't make him an evil criminal mastermind. And that's what's so funny to me, is they try to make him into this nefarious character. They try to make him this evil Russian double agent that seeks the destruction of America, while simultaneously saying, but he's a moron who can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Well, you can't have it both ways. He's either an idiot or he's this nefarious criminal character who's so smart that he's undermining the people around him and undermining this country. It's one or the other. You can't have it both ways. And that's why you'll say to me, or you'll hear me say, rather, when I was talking about the Democrats, I don't do that with them. You have never heard me call President Obama a moron. There are things he did that I thought were moronic. He took stupid actions and made stupid decisions from time to time. But I don't believe President Obama was stupid. I think he's incredibly intelligent. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. I think he's an ideological Marxist who wanted to bring the country closer to the system that Karl Marx envisioned. Whether he would have phrased it that way or not, I really don't know. But the point is, I do believe that he was doing that intentionally. That's not the case for every Democrat. And this is something that I've been saying for a very long time. You have to take people on a case-by-case basis. For example, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is an incompetent moron. President Obama, Democrat, disagree with him, but he's a smart guy. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, not a smart person, still disagree with her. See how that works? You can disagree with someone and still have different opinions about their intelligence level. Just because you disagree with somebody does not make them an idiot. And just because you disagree with someone doesn't make them evil. In Debbie Wasserman Schultz's case, maybe she is a little of both. But my point in all of this is, you have to make calls on people on a case-by-case basis, and the Democrats make every Republican out to be both an idiot and some evil, dastardly character. You can't have it both ways. It has to be one or the other. And so when it comes to Donald Trump, they're trying to do this, and it shows the reason that people have a hard time paying attention to them when they lob these accusations against Republicans, because it shows that they've really got nothing on the person. Now, in Trump's case, maybe he actually did collude with Russia. There's been no evidence of that so far. But if that's the case, he ought to be held responsible for his actions. But we don't have any evidence of that yet. I tend to think, based on what I've seen, and granted, this could all change with this investigation, I don't think that Donald Trump is colluding with the Russians. I think there might have been people around him that certainly did. But the idea that Donald Trump himself is in on the whole thing, and I don't think that his entire campaign or his entire staff is in with the Russians either. I think there's probably a handful of people that are. We already know, I just mentioned about Manafort. We already know that Michael Flynn had some connection with them in that whole campaign in Turkey. We know that there are people around him that have eerily close ties with Russia. But that's not the same as Donald Trump himself having ties to Russia. So that's just something to consider. You have to be honest with the evidence when you're discussing issues like this. And it kind of reminds me, because Chuck Schumer just the other day talking about Trump's budget said it's comic book villain level bad, and then goes and proceeds to explain why the budget doesn't work, the math isn't good, that only an idiot would come up with this. Well, you just said that he's evil. If he were evil, wouldn't his plan be a lot more airtight? If he's this cartoonish comic book villain sort of character, wouldn't his budget be a lot better concealed than you're making it out like it is? Now, I talked about the budget. I've got some things that I really like about it, some things that I absolutely hate about it. For one thing, it doesn't really do much to affect spending, which is a big problem, and it gets rid of a lot of entitlements, but it also creates a lot of entitlements. So really all we're doing is changing where the money goes. So I have my own problems with the budget. I understand that. But when you're talking about the numbers, the ones and zeros, everything that's going in there, if he was this evil Lex Luthor type of, by the way, businessman who is secretly evil and winds up in the White House, that is Lex Luthor, by the way. That actually did happen in the comics. But if you're going to make him out to be Lex Luthor, you can't really simultaneously be saying that and making the argument that he's also an idiot. Because that's the thing about Lex Luthor. He's a genius. And part of the reason that people like him, people flock to him, is because he's so well-spoken, that he's so intelligent and has that charisma that people are drawn to him. That's not why people like Donald Trump. He's a very different kind of person. And I'm not saying that Chuck Schumer was drawing a one-to-one between Trump and Lex Luthor, but he seems to be making the case that he is this nefarious figure when he's also making the case at exactly the same time that, well, he's just blatantly incompetent. It has to be one or the other. And that's something the Democrats have seemed to have a hard time pinning down on Republicans, because it's hard to make that case at the same time. And that's why it's harder to take them seriously when they're talking about matters like this. They show themselves to be nothing but partisan hacks. And none of Chuck Schumer's, as far as I could tell, I didn't see really anything in there that made me think that Chuck Schumer's criticism was legitimate, even though I am a person that disagrees with the budget myself. So it just shows that there's really not any common ground that could be reached, and I think that's because the Democrats don't have any interest in reaching a common ground. We'll be right back. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
You do well to wish to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and happier people than you are. George Washington.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. Wanted to mention this before we move on. The Sounds of Summer concert series returns to the shops at East Chase on Thursday, June the 1st. This free event, hosted by News Radio 1440, kicks off at 6, with River Dan taking the stage at 7. Enjoy music, fun, music and fun, including kids' activities, food vendors, and your chance to win a $50 gift card for the Shops at East Chase. We'll see you at the Sounds of Summer with the Shops of East Chase and News Radio 1440. Now, I did want to bring this up real quick, because for those of you who have been paying attention to the news, you know that splashed across everything this morning was the Greg Gianforte election that he wound up winning last night, despite, and here's, I mean, it's really not comical, but the guy winds up, according to the reporter, Ben Jacobs, body slamming him, asking him a question just the night before an election. And somehow Greg Gianforte, the Republican in the race, winds up winning the election anyway. Now, there were reporters there, and not Washington Post or CBS News reporters, Fox News reporters, that colluded this story, that saw this whole thing take place and actually mentioned that it seemed to them, at least, that this was even worse than the audio lends itself to be. In other words, that he not only pushed the guy over, but actually had his hands around his throat and then started punching him. So this is not some fake news conspiracy. Multiple sources have corroborated this. And Wednesday night, just before his election, winds up having this altercation with Ben Jacobs. Now, I was watching CNN the other day, and they had an interview and asked Jacobs, is this a pattern of violence within the GOP? I want to give major props to Ben Jacobs, because that's a leading question. The person hosting that show there, the anchor, obviously knew that what he was asking was trying to give Jacobs a platform to essentially reprimand the quote-unquote culture of violence that exists within the GOP, their hurtful rhetoric, their violent tendencies, which the Dems have done everything they can to convince you exist. I'm not a Republican. I'm not always on board with what the Republicans are saying. But the idea that they're a violent mafia that would just as soon take people out as they would win an election is overblown to the nth degree. And Ben Jacobs, his response was, no, this is not something I've experienced with the Republicans. This was a one-time thing, never had something like this happen. Hopefully it never happens again. And said that with Republicans, that there have been Republicans that, even when they disagreed with him, would cheer him on, that sent him emails saying that they appreciated his time, his fair coverage, that kind of thing. Ben Jacobs, of course, being a reporter for The Guardian, so he has dealt with politicians before. And the question that he was asking, which, by the way, there was other media officials that witnessed this here, so it obviously was not closed to the press. Apparently, he personally had not been invited to this event, which was a point of contention with Greg Gianforte, the newest representative in the House of Representatives now. But Ben Jacobs went out of his way, did not have to do this. Jacobs went out of his way to say, hey, this is not something that I've been seeing out of the GOP. This is not a trait that I have seen them embody before. So I want to give major props to him for saying that. He had every opportunity to make this into some kind of larger GOP conspiracy. Now, a reasonable person wouldn't have believed him, but the point is that's the way it was. The reporter, though, that was asking the question, it's clear to me, based on some of the media coverage of this, and this is just a microcosm of the larger media coverage we've been seeing, that they're trying to craft this narrative that Greg Gianforte just happens to be one of the few people that took it one step further, that people who liked Trump, that voted for Trump, they like violence, they like the idea that this guy would body slam it. Now, unfortunately, I have seen on very, very small scales a little bit of evidence to support that. And what I mean by that is I've been listening to different talk shows, been seeing some of the callers call in and say, well, he should have done it. Well, he deserved it. No, we're not animals. We're not savages. We're living in the United States of America. If you're a reporter, even if you weren't invited to an event and you walk in, and you ask a question, which, by the way, this was a completely fair question. All he was asking Gianforte was whether or not he would support the House's new health care bill. He was trying to hedge his answer by saying, well, I haven't seen the CBO's scoring of it, and so I'll comment on it afterward. What he was trying to do, because this bill is wildly unpopular, he was trying to time it out, and essentially he was hoping that the CBO wouldn't score it until after his election. Unfortunately, they came out with it a few days ago. This reporter comes up, asks him about that. Completely fair question. Gianforte is the one that set that standard for himself. He's the one that told the media, when they score it, I will give an answer. Ben Jacobs is just doing his job trying to get this answer. It wasn't an unfair question. He wasn't trying to play a game of gotcha. And this altercation happens to him. This is not acceptable behavior for a politician or anyone. We have freedom of the press. We have freedom of speech. If a reporter is there and he's not supposed to be there, the appropriate response to that is to ask him to leave or have security or something like that come and deal with it. The correct answer is not grab the guy by the throat and start punching him. And that's a pretty low bar that I think we can all agree should be set for not only politicians, but everyone in general. Now, Gianforte winds up winning already, and what the media has already tried to do is they've tried to make this connected to Donald Trump. They're saying the way that Trump talks, how harsh he is, his supporters who like violence, they love the tough talk, they love the idea of somebody attacking reporters because they don't like it, because Donald Trump put himself in opposition to the media, which is part of the reason the media despises him so much. That is going to be the narrative that they are running with, that they are sticking to. They're going to be saying that this is connected to Trump, it's indicative of him, it's indicative of the people who voted for him that just really love violence and love seeing someone be this tough with somebody, especially when it comes to the media. And the press doesn't want to take any responsibility, and I'm not saying the press is responsible for what happened to Ben Jacobs. That's all on Gianforte. It's his fault. Nobody else's, so I'm not trying to make an excuse for that there. All I'm saying is the media refuses to take any responsibility or talk about how they had played any part whatsoever in the perception, if nothing else. I think it's 100% real, and you know that if you've been listening to me. But this perception that the media is ridiculously biased against conservatives, that they hold them to a different standard than they do people on their side, people on the left. However, I think it's important to note that we don't have to imagine how the media would handle something like this if it were on their side. Why don't we have to do that? Because we have actually a very similar story that happened just all the way back in June of 2010, when a North Carolina congressman, Bob Etheridge, who was up for re-election for his seventh term, he was a Democrat and asked by a reporter if he supported the Obama agenda. And the guy grabs his cell phone, his camera, his wrist, grabs him by the neck, very rough with him. You can check out the video. I'm sure if you search Bob Etheridge, that's probably the first thing that comes up. But my point in all that is, the media flocked to the GOP when this happened. They were trying to project this quote-unquote culture of violence on the entire Republican Party. They were sticking mics in Paul Ryan's face and other prominent Republicans' face, asking if they condoned this, trying to play gotcha, trying to make the entire GOP responsible for this. Watching the news just this morning, talking about how we're seeing a very slow and hesitant response to it, Republicans unwilling to condemn it. Look, there may be some Republicans that are unwilling to condemn it, and if they are, they should be held responsible. But the point is, they didn't do that with Bob Etheridge. They didn't run to Feinstein or Schumer or Obama and talk about, well, do you condone this? Is this okay? Trying to project this on the entire Democrat Party. That didn't happen. And so part of the reason that conservatives, and again, this is not me talking about Gianforte, this is me talking about conservatives in general, like myself. The reason that we are thoroughly convinced that the media is so blatantly one-sided is because of stuff like this. When a Democrat does something stupid, it's that one Democrat's problem. When a Republican does something stupid, it's a fault of the entire Republican Party and anyone on the right. Not even necessarily Republicans. Libertarians, whomever it may be, anyone that is not a hardcore leftist must be engaged in some kind of culture of violence if one conservative does this. Now, they are trying to make this guy the poster boy of the GOP, and that's going to be a pattern that repeats itself, that they're going to continue to be pushing that narrative for his entire tenure, which is why, honestly, there was a part of me that was kind of hoping that he lost. It wasn't a one-vote majority in the House. We would have been fine with having one less vote. So I kind of wish this problem would go away, but it doesn't look like that's the case. There's never an excuse for violence against another person in this sense.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
It's Friday, which means we've got another Top 10. Welcome back, everybody. Hour two of The Patriot Preacher is on now. As always, I'm your host, Caleb Colquitt. We do have the Nerd Herd back with us since it is Friday. Andrew, Chris, and AJ, say hi, guys.
Hey!
Hi.
Good to have y'all back with us. We do have the top 10 because it's Friday, and this top 10 is the top 10 things you'll never hear a true Alabamian say.
All right. Woo! Good job!
Here it is, the top 10 things you will never hear a true Alabamian say. Number 10, I wish I didn't have to eat grandma's cooking.
Yeah, she always cooks the best.
Yep. Number 9, it's supposed to snow, but I'm sure it won't be a problem.
What is snow?
It's this white fluffy stuff that falls out of the sky.
I think it's illegal.
Connecticut confetti. Number 8. It's a real shame y'all don't have Pepsi products.
Coke just can't compete.
Number 7. I'm pretty sure you can't deep fry that.
You can't deep fry Kit Kat.
Reese's cups aren't that great either.
I'm just saying you can deep fry anything. Whether it's good or not is a different question.
Good point.
Number 6. The air conditioner broke, but it's no big deal.
Lies.
Our power went out the other day, and we had to get a hotel room so we would have air conditioning.
That sounds about right.
It got all the way up to 72 degrees in the house.
This is the worst. Number 5. What are grits?
That's a sin.
I must be the only Southerner that doesn't like grits.
Actually, I'm not a huge fan of grits, but I know what they are.
But... So not true Alabamians, then.
No, I didn't say I dislike them. I just said it's not like my favorite. Number 4. Hey, did you catch the soccer game last night?
Andrew.
Oh, man, that was good. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Number 3. Most of my weekends in the fall are wide open. Number 2. This tea's too sweet.
Don't like tea either. I'm a bad son.
Yeah, you got a tough crowd for that one, actually.
You've got it double bad, AJ, because you're also part Asian, so I don't understand you don't like tea.
It's coming from both sides, and I still don't like it. I don't know what's wrong with me.
And here we go. The number one thing that you will never hear a true Alabamian say. I've never really been a Lynyrd Skynyrd fan.
They're not allowed in Alabama.
Get out of the state. Get out of the state now. So there you have it. The top 10 things you'll never hear a true Alabamian say.
That was good.
Thank you. Before we go, I do want to mention one of our great sponsors. That is Jim Woodham's Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway. Trust these guys. Anything that you need done to your car, they can do it, or they can recommend you to somebody who can. So go check them out today. Anything that's wrong with your car, or you just need some kind of routine maintenance, a checkup before you go on vacation. I know a lot of you guys are going to be hitting the road this summer, so make sure your car is in good shape, because you do not want to find out there is something wrong with your car when you're on the way to Florida and you've got an unhappy family stuck halfway between destination and your house. So be sure to check that out. Jim Woodham, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway, right here in Montgomery. Been in business 50 years, so be sure to pay them a visit today. All right, we'll be right back with more with the Nerd Herd.
Girl and settle down. Live a simple life in a quiet town. Steady as she goes. Steady as she goes.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and News Radio 1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. We've got the Nerd Herd back with us for another segment, but unfortunately, we lost one during the commercial break, Andrew's gone mainly just because he's whipped. So he had to go do something with the wife. She called him out. So we're actually here with just Chris and AJ right now, but that's fine. We will carry on. And there was something really important that I wanted to get you guys to comment on. Yesterday, May the 25th, if you go back 40 years to 1977, that was the day that Star Wars released in theaters. So Star Wars is 40 years old as of yesterday. This is a big anniversary for them. It's hard to imagine that it's been 40 years since Star Wars first came out. Do you guys think that George Lucas imagined that the franchise, the movie he was working on, was going to blow up like this?
I'm pretty sure he didn't. Otherwise, he would have kept more money to himself.
You think so?
I think we know that he really didn't have an idea, because didn't they like have to rush and change the title of the second movie in the late 70s for marketing purposes when they realized it was as popular as it was?
I don't really know. I'm not sure if that was part of their marketing scheme. I wasn't alive back then, so I wasn't really paying much attention to it. But
there's some story where like it didn't used to be Episode 4. It was just A New Hope. And then when it did as well as it did, they went back and actually something like took the movie out of theaters and changed it to Episode 4 when they decided to start recording more movies. So they definitely didn't know it was going to be that successful.
I did hear a rumor that the reason that the ending in 4 is the way it is with the ceremony where they're receiving the medals is because they left it open-ended just in case it didn't get a sequel. Because
right.
George Lucas had a sequel in mind, but he wanted to end the movie in such a way that if they had a sequel, great. If not, then it wasn't left unfinished. So
this was before the time you had Marvel movies that were 6 or 7 movies planned out in advance.
True, but even comic book movies aren't completely immune, because if you'll remember, Green Lantern left a cliffhanger and one of the teasers after the credits at the end of its movie, which anybody watching that movie in post-production should have been able to tell that it was not going to get a sequel.
But, yeah, that was a great point, except for that was a DC movie.
That's why I said comic book movie, not Marvel movie specifically.
That's kind of self-explanatory.
Well, you've got a point there. But my point is, you're right, it's a different dynamic now. They used to be a lot more cautious about movies getting sequels. And keep in mind, unlike the Marvel movies and some of the popular movies today, Star Wars didn't have a source material. The movie was the story. And that's something that you don't see as much of today.
I'm kind of wondering if Star Wars as a franchise is going to go out and buy a sports car now that it's 40. Kind of entering that midlife crisis stage.
Start dating its intern.
Ugh.
I think that it's definitely climbed to heights that Lucas would have never imagined. But just out of curiosity, and you can just talk about your own personal preferences, because I think the series is different enough to different people. It's big enough now that fans like it for different reasons. What about the Star Wars franchise as a whole? Movies, video games, whatever. What about Star Wars really draws you guys to it?
First of all, I need to give credit to Chris here for getting me interested in Star Wars.
Yes.
Almost 15 years ago. It's all his fault that I am the way I am because I love Star Wars so much. The wallpapers on my computer, all Star Wars stuff. Caleb, your Yoda bobblehead that you got me for my birthday a few years ago, I still got that sitting on my computer.
Good to hear.
I at one point seriously considered naming my son Luke. Just for the fact that I could say I am your father and actually have some kind of credit behind it.
What about the series draws you to it? Like, you've told us that you're a big fan and understand that, but what about it draws you to it? What do you like about it?
Well, until Disney bought it, basically just how like vast the story of it was, the expanding universe stuff, all the canon facts. I just liked how detailed it was and how much thought was put into it. Even wasn't from Lucas, it was from a lot of people with creative license to do so. I think they did so very well.
So in other words, in a sense, kind of like going out into space itself, you liked exploring the universe and the different aspects of it.
Yeah. I liked how they came up with ideas for different planets, different races, species, that kind of stuff. I just really like all the detail behind it.
And there's a lot of variation in the Star Wars universe from different cultures that they've made, the different environments. When you talk about world building, and I know in Star Wars it's almost like multiple world building, but they really created a universe that I think is compelling and has really stood the test of time. I mean, it's 40 years old and we're still talking about it. So what would your reaction to that question be, Chris?
I think one of the things that makes it so unique to me is that it's a true science fantasy. franchise. You have your science fiction, like Star Trek, kind of your harder science. And then you have your fantasy, like your Lord of the Rings, all those different things. But what's cool about Star Wars is it takes the concepts of both, and both genres I really enjoy, and meshes them together to where you have a fantastical interpretation of a science fiction setting.
Right, because you've got both the high-tech portion of it, space travel, the blasters, but then you also have the aspect of the supernatural, the Force, the Jedi, the Sith, that kind of thing.
Right, I'm a real big sucker for weird genre pairs like that. That's not really weird, but when you pair up two genres I really like and you stick them together, sometimes it makes really interesting combinations. It's kind of like a chocolate and peanut butter deal. Now, sometimes you get ice cream and sushi, but sometimes when it comes together really well, it's really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer. Historic fiction and doesn't go together well, so you can definitely...
It can be done well, but I don't know if that was done well.
Right, I was just giving an example of how it can fall apart, but no, I hear what you're saying, and I really like the fact that it has that fantasy sort of aspect to it. In fact, because I've told you guys this before, one of the things that really draws me to it is because I'm a sucker for a good epic. The whole good versus evil, the struggle between the Jedi and the Sith, and I really love the Jedi Order. And I know that this is a sticking point between my fanship and your fanship. I'm not really nearly as interested in the bounty hunters or the troopers or any of that stuff. I really just like Jedi. And so, really,
you're going to be disappointed in this new movie.
Well, exactly. The Last Jedi. I'm really, really kind of dreading what that might imply for the rest of the series. But I'm
rest assured that Jedi is plural.
Right.
As has been revealed many times in different countries, different languages.
Right. So. In this particular instance, because I'm such a big fan of Jedi, because I love the lore surrounding the Jedi Order, that's what really draws me into it. I'm not quite as interested. It's not that I'm uninterested, but I'm not as interested in the other aspects of the universe, and were it not for Jedi and that fantasy aspect of the Star Wars franchise, I'm not sure I would be all that into it. I think that's the reason that I've had a hard time really getting into Star Trek, is because it's essentially Star Wars without that. Just out of curiosity, do you guys like the direction that the Star Wars franchise is going in now? We're 40 years later, we've got Disney owning it, we've got new movies coming out like Rogue One, and the new Star Wars that's going to be coming out here in the winter with Episode 8. Do you guys like the general direction, the way that it's going now?
I was a little apprehensive at first. Like, when I heard that Disney bought it, I said, oh, they're just going to run into the ground, or they're going to buy it up just for the intellectual property. But I was kind of surprised when they made The Force Awakens. I genuinely liked it. It felt like a true mirror of Episode 1 and Episode 4. Not that it was like a complete mirror image, it followed the exact same storyline, but there was enough differences there to let you know that it was in better hands and new hands. It had fresh ideas in it.
Yeah, that actually brings up some things that are, in a lot of ways, something that I'm worried about with the series is, I really like that aspect of it. I really like the way that they went into it, in a sense, trying to recreate the world of Star Wars, trying to recreate the first movie in certain ways. But at the same time, honestly, I'm pretty concerned that they'll try to do that with the other movies. I think if The Last Jedi winds up being essentially just a rehash of The Empire Strikes Back, then they're in trouble, because it shows that they're not innovating enough. I think it was okay to do that with Episode 7, but if they do the same thing with Episode 8, I think that it's going to wind up blowing up in their face.
I think Episode 7 really nailed on the head that they were appealing to two different generations of people.
Right, two fan bases.
In 1977, who were like, oh, well, I wonder how it's going to be, and it echoed Episode 4 enough that they were saying, okay, you know, this is very familiar, they can get on board with this. But there was enough new stuff there that would bring in new audience and get them excited about it.
Right, so what about you, Chris? What do you think about the new direction the franchise is going in?
Yeah, I've been pleasantly surprised, too. I like the fact that while they are paying tribute to what came before, they're still kind of pushing into new areas. I really liked Rogue One. I know you weren't as big a fan of Rogue One because it didn't have any Jedi in it, no lightsabers. But
yeah,
really
it was a good movie. I just wanted some Jedi.
Well, I liked what they did with Rogue One because they had a blind, Force-sensitive character. They were looking at the rebellion, the normal, quote, normal people, the non-Jedi people, and the conflict they were going through. they've explored other force sensitives like Maz from episode 7. And so they're feeling their way around the universe and kind of exploring a little bit to kind of see where all they can push things and what other creative outlets they can leverage and where else they can help build more of a universe beyond what we're used to. And I think they're doing that in a responsible enough way that it, so far it's worked pretty well.
I'm still optimistic because good storytelling is good storytelling, whether or not my particularly favorite characters are going to be in it. So I am optimistic about it, but that's one thing that does give me pause, because when it comes to the Jedi, it does seem like they're trying to keep still the fantasy aspect of it, but move further and further away from the Jedi with each new movie that they come out with. And so I'm a little bit worried about it, because keep in mind, Episode 7 technically didn't have any Jedi until the tail end where they saw Luke. So it seems to me they're moving away from that, and the title of Episode 8, The Last Jedi, kind of hints at that. So I'm a little worried about it. I am cautiously optimistic, though.
What Chris said about exploring Force sensitives aren't necessarily Jedi like Maz, my wife Danielle pointed this out. She's an English major, so she picks up on these kind of nuances when someone speaks.
Right.
How she said, I'm no Jedi, but I know the Force. She said it with like such assurance, I know the Force. So I'm interested in her backstory. How does she know the Force? What about the Force does she know? I'm really interested in how she got Luke's lightsaber.
Yeah, that's interesting, that's, too, that's because he lost that in Episode 5 in Cloud City. So how did that
should
come
have been
about?
A hand with it, you know, but
yeah.
Yeah, why didn't she save his hand? I mean, come on.
It was probably all gross and decayed by the time she came around to it. If you've got that cool robotic hand, you don't really need it anymore, I guess. I don't know. I'm really interested to see where this series goes, and of course we're going to have to wait to December to see the next big installment, but in the meantime, I am excited, and happy 40th anniversary, Star Wars. Hopefully there's many more years of adventures to come with that franchise. Really looking forward to it. All right, guys, we're going to be right back. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to call in, let us know what you're thinking. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me?
Welcome back. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440, as always, are the numbers if you want to weigh in. And I still have Chris and AJ with me. They joined me via Skype. Now, I did want to talk to you guys about something on a little more serious note, though, because, of course, the big news story this week was the attacks that happened in Manchester, England, right outside an Ariana Grande concert, with the guy going in and just blowing up. 22 people died, 59 injured. I think that really what this story did, and the reason that it was so horrific and it changed the game in some ways, because this is more significant than just another terrorist attack. What was really disturbing to a lot of people, myself included, is because now what they're doing is they're specifically hunting out and targeting kids, because Ariana Grande, she has a very young fan base. The victims that we know of so far mostly were little kids, and with a suicide bomber, you know exactly who your targets are. You're seeking out a certain group, you walk amongst them, and then you blow yourself up. So you're around the people that you're going to be killing. And so because of that, and because he specifically targeted mostly kids, mostly girls, I think that that's what really added the shock value, because even in brutal terrorist attacks where people died, we've not really seen that as much in the Western world. So what do you guys think about that with this whole new development that's going on? You think this is something we're going to see more of? Do you think it was just a coincidence? What's your thoughts on it?
So they talk on the news a lot when they discuss these types of attacks, and they mention soft targets, right?
Right.
Soft targets being public places, probably with not a whole lot of police presence, but where you have a whole lot of people. So subways or concert venues, restaurants, things like that. As far as that goes, this is fairly in line with some of the other attacks that have happened in the past few years, trying to find those soft targets. Another good point I saw brought up on the news the other day was that, so this was the second concert in Europe that had been targeted recently. And in both cases, now this might be too few examples to find a pattern or anything, but in both cases, it was an American performer or an American group that was performing at the venue. Like I said, I don't know if that's a pattern or not, but obviously we're fairly popular antagonists in these people's eyes. As far as the age goes, that I'm not sure of. We haven't really seen any sort of discrimination as far as demographics goes, really, in the past, at least not that I can remember. So that is a bit of a twist, and I'm not too few real cases to really kind of draw too many conclusions, but that would be new and different, and of course, even more disturbing than even what we've seen so far.
It seems kind of bad for me to say, and I don't want to sound insensitive or anything, but these kind of news articles that come across and breaking news, there's another bombing somewhere, I've kind of become desensitized to it. The first thing that comes across my mind is, oh, another one. Gee, I wonder who it could be. Oh, it's ISIS. Big surprise there. It seems like it's becoming far too common, and it's just another thing to report. Like, you know, the weather. It's become like the weather. You report, hey, you know, it's sunny outside. Oh, and there was a bombing in Manchester, and ISIS was responsible. Back to you, Greg. Something like that.
And that's possibly part of this issue, is that if this violence becomes normalized, then you have to keep increasing the shock factor to keep getting headlines, right?
Right, and that's actually one of the things that I was going to bring up, because unfortunately, terrorist attacks in England, in Europe in general, that kill a dozen or so people have become kind of commonplace and don't get as much news coverage as they would have at one time, which is a shame that they've become almost, I won't say mundane, but certainly more common than they have ever been. And so I think maybe that was part of the reason that if ISIS really was behind this, that the people that they're targeting are going to be people that drum up more media because of the nature of the person that's being attacked.
You'd have to think, though, and maybe not because these people are so dark and twisted, but you'd think at some point they would cross some sort of line that would negatively affect their efforts to recruit. Is this going to change their recruiting in a negative way if it becomes obvious that they were targeting children? Is there any line for people? I don't know.
Here's the reason I don't think so, Chris. There's two main reasons that I want to give for that I don't think that's going to affect it. The first one being that their religion teaches this. I mean, it teaches that if you are not a Muslim, and especially if you're a woman, but even if you're a man, if you're not a Muslim, you're essentially not a person. There's surahs in the Quran that say if you're not a Muslim, you can slaughter people en masse, gather them up and sell them for ransom, use them as slaves when it comes to women, use them as sexual objects, raping little kids. There was a girl that was reported, it was several months ago now, a 9-year-old girl that was impregnated by rape over there that we found out about. And that was one of the things that I was going to bring up. Targeting kids is kind of a new thing in Europe, but as far as what ISIS has been doing over in the Middle East, targeting children's commonplace. We're seeing kids literally burned alive in cages, or children as young as 11, 12 being crucified as an example in front of other people. And so because of that, that's really the two reasons that I think that that's not going to happen or negatively affect their recruiting, is because A, their religion teaches it, and B, they're already carrying it out en masse in the place that they're recruiting the most. So I'd like to think that. I would like to think that there's some aspect of humanity and human decency in at least some of these people that thought about joining ISIS that are saying, well, that's a bridge too far. But with everything that ISIS is doing and is already known to do, anybody that really has any knowledge of what ISIS is doing, I think if they're going to fall in line with them, that line would have already been crossed a long time ago.
This probably isn't the end of us continuing to be disgusted with this either, because as they continue to lose ground in their so-called caliphate,
right,
in Raqqa, Mosul, all those places in Syria and Iraq, if there's continued success by the United States, the coalition, the Iraqi government, in Iraq's case, whoever, if they continue to lose legitimacy and they continue to lose ground, you have to think if they're going to try to fight, they're going to have to do it in some sort of asymmetric way, and that's usually these types of attacks.
Right. Well, that's the thing. They know that it's impossible for them to fight a conventional war and really do any damage because they're just so severely outgunned, it's laughable. But what do you do when you're outgunned? You go and attack the people on the other side that don't have guns. And that's how you wind up doing that in small ambush guerrilla style attacks like these terrorist attacks are. I wanted to bring this up too because I thought that this was disturbing because it's bad enough that we're having to deal with the terrorists. There were people on the left in England that were actually telling people and pushing the narrative that when this news of this attack broke and they were saying that there was a connection to ISIS, that they said that the people on the right, not conservatives, because that's right and left are different in Europe. The right means more nationalist over there.
Oh, we know how they drive on the roads, too.
Right. It's all reversed, like living in a mirror. But anyway, the people on the left said the right-wing people, the nationalists over in Europe, they were just saying this to try to frame Muslims, and Muslims didn't have anything to do with this attack. This was just some crazy person, and it was the right that was trying to drum up this conspiracy to make Muslims look bad. When you're looking at something like that, I think it's disturbing that on something that should be uniting us like this, uniting us in a cause against evil, we're still so caught up in the whole right versus left thing that we're fighting each other and competing for what side was right. To me, that was really disturbing too, because if any event should be able to bring people together, it's children getting killed and going after those responsible.
Crazy, like how heinous it is to kill kids and children, of all things.
And it's a shame to be distracted from it by partisanship or this or that. And I guess that kind of plays into the whole strategy, right? To divide people against each other in our societies to prevent us from being able to more effectively handle these things.
It's not an easy thing to respond to, but if we're going to wind up bringing those responsible to justice, if we're going to be able to take on the terrorist, then we're going to have to be united. And this playing politics when it comes to this, just it doesn't sit well with me. So one thing that I did notice that I thought was interesting was in Manchester, what you had is afterward, you had literal military policing the streets, making sure that everybody was okay, which in response to something like this, I understand to a degree, but I was thinking about it. If we had an attack like this where several kids were killed here in America, do you guys think that we would have the National Guard just rolling up and down the streets and curfews and all this stuff? Because that, to me, would be pretty scary.
Well, it didn't happen when the school shootings happened, so I don't see why it would now.
Well, the difference is, with the school shooting, that's a local issue. When you're talking about an actual terrorist attack, that's an international national defense issue, which the Constitution grants the federal government more power over. And so that's the reason I'm thinking it could be different. It's a good point, AJ, and it's one that I do think we should take into consideration because Americans aren't quite as gung-ho as Europe may be about that, but there is a difference here. And so do you think that difference is enough to merit a different response?
Well, I think we also have to consider that these countries over in Europe are much smaller as well.
True.
And so just thinking about percentage-wise, what percent of their military is being used versus what our percent would be, what percent of their police force is trained in, I don't know, counterterrorism or whatever, what percentage of their population is being affected, because your cities in Europe are a lot more dense as well. So the countries are smaller and the cities are more densely populated. So it's probably different. In those cases, kind of like you mentioned, it's probably kind of a different situation. I think also just, I guess, culturally, the way we're set up, that's not something that we really jump to as quickly maybe as other countries would.
Okay. Well, it was just something that I thought about, maybe something to be aware of in the future, because I don't know that it's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, maybe if it's just for a couple days, but that's something that I think Americans in general, because we live in a different kind of society, would be more skeptical of allowing to happen. But when you have that young kids, especially young girls, getting blown up indiscriminately like that, it does create that shock value. We may make decisions like that. I was just saying it's a possibility.
Do also keep in mind the difference in how a British police officer is armed on the street versus how an American police officer is armed, how the police units, I guess, are armed.
See, that's an excellent point, because over in England, the police officers don't actually have guns.
Yeah, so that would probably make them less reliant on the military as well. I think ours are more trained towards situations in combat as opposed to maybe some European countries.
Guys, I appreciate you being with me. We're about to go to a break, but it's a really difficult situation, and I know that Manchester, as big a deal as it has been in the news this week, it's going to start fading out of our memory in the next few weeks. There's nothing good or bad about that. It's humans. We can't really do much about that, but this is not going to be a week-long news story for these families and the victims, the people that were affected. So please remember to keep them in your prayers. Do the best that you can to pray for them and help out in any way that you can. Hopefully we'll be doing some follow-up on this in the near future, but please continue to pray for the families and the victims of those that were killed or injured. Really, I would say on a larger scale, just continue to pray that in some way God's going to bring these people to justice, and this will be a problem, hopefully, that we won't have to deal with nearly as much in the future. All right, guys, appreciate you being with me. We're going to go to a break. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be right back. There's a hope in the world tonight. There's a cloud of fear and sorrow. There's a
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free."
Welcome back, everybody. Star Spangled Sermon is on the Patriot Preacher this morning. We're going to close you out and get you to your weekend. I had a talk with someone that asked me something that was a little strange. You remember at the very top of the hour I was talking about, actually it was the top of the first hour, I was talking about the Planned Parenthood videos. Well, there was somebody that I'm close to that I was mentioning this to, and they asked me to stop talking about it because it was depressing them. And that really stuck out to me, because I know that this person is a good person. I know that they have a good heart. I know that they do care. But essentially what they told me was that since there was nothing that they felt that they could do about the situation, nothing they could do to stop abortion or to change somebody's mind, they said that they just didn't feel like knowing it would do them any good, and because knowing it makes them uncomfortable, they would rather just not know it if they can't change it anyway. When I said, "Well, we have to do something about it," he said, "That's all right, somebody else will lead the charge," and then actually pointed to me and said, you're one of the people leading the charge. But I don't know if that's true or not. I do the best that I can. Apparently I'm nowhere near as effective as I would like to be, because it's still something that's allowed in this country. But I thought about the parable of the talents, where Jesus is talking about these three servants, that the master gave them a measure of money. He gave five talents, which is a very large sum of money, to one, two talents to another, and one talent to the last man. And the first two servants doubled their money. The master was pleased, gave them charge over even more money than they had made. And then the last man decided that it was best to bury his talent, to bury the resources that his master had given him. And he returned the exact same amount of money to the master. He had not lost anything, but he had also not gained anything. The master was very upset with him for this, because he had wasted the resources that had been given to him. And in a lot of ways, that's the message Jesus was trying to convey is that God has given us blessings because he expects a return. And when we ignore our duties, when we ignore to do that which we are tasked with, that is, loving our brothers and sisters, following God, standing up against evil, then the Lord is not going to be happy with us either. I reflected on this story from the book of Esther. Now, just a quick background, because there's so much in the book of Esther, but I want to give just a quick little summary. Esther has been made queen of Persia basically by default. She didn't want to be queen. She wound up being called up like a lot of young maidens and had essentially tryouts to be the king's wife, and she found favor in the king's sight. He chose her to marry. And Haman, the king's right-hand man, is decreeing that all the Jews will be destroyed at a certain time because he hates the Jews, and he essentially tricked the king into signing a decree that all the Jews will be killed and wiped out, which cannot be undone because the law of the Medes and the Persians is decrees cannot be undone even by the king. Now, Esther is made aware of this from her cousin Mordecai. And he says, you need to go to the king and tell him what's happening and ask him to help us. And she says, I can't go to the king. If you go to the king and he doesn't put out the scepter to receive you, then you can be killed. And so out of genuine fear for her life, which was 100% legitimate, Esther says, I can't do this thing. And then, to me, this is the most inspiring verse in the entire book of Esther. These two verses, Esther 4, 13 and 14. Mordecai responding to her. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this? First of all, I'd like to just point out, look at Mordecai's faith. He says, you need to do this. This may be the reason that God put you in the position of being queen. But even if you refuse, God's going to save the Jewish people. He is going to protect his people, whether it's through you or somebody else. That's an amazing amount of faith that Mordecai is saying, God is going to protect us no matter what happens. But then Mordecai does this, which I found was interesting. He knows that God is not going to hold those who remain idle guiltless. He knows that Esther is going to be called into account for the actions that she takes in this life, regardless of how she feels about them. And so even though she has a very legitimate reason for being afraid to go before the king, Mordecai says, yeah, salvation's going to come one way or the other, but for your sake, because it's the right thing to do, and because you want to sustain yourself in your father's house, you need to do it because God will hold you accountable if you refuse to do that which is right. We cannot ignore evil when we have the ability to play a role in stopping it, and being members of a free republic as we are, that would include all of us in America. We have a responsibility to stand against evil, regardless of who it was. And isn't it interesting that in Esther's story, the evil she was trying to prevent is a mass slaughter, a genocide, which is exactly what we're trying to prevent with abortion. I believe that Mordecai's faith stirred Esther's face because she said, then I will go before the king, and if I perish, I perish. Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.